Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. This one's up a little bit later because last week's we'd recorded it in time and then I lost the file. So Sandra had to find her version and we're a little bit late, but we're fine.
But at least it's not lost forever.
At least it's not,
right?
Well, what you really mean is, at least I didn't need to re-record it.
That is exactly what I mean, because re-recording that podcast is not something I want to do.
No. I mean, Raw Saturday Night was delightful. And how bad it was. But, you know.
I mean, you say delightful, I say a chore.
Doc Hendricks morphed into Michael Hayes and was
That's
beaten
true.
Up by Kane.
There I mean, was that. And then Kane tombstoned him.
I mean,
that
I
was lost.
I will not take any negativity about that. So this is the February 23rd, 1998 episode of Raw, even though it was filmed on February the 17th, from Waco, Texas, in the heart of Texas Coliseum. Good name.
Yeah.
We open the show with the tag team title match of the New Age Outlaws versus the Legion of Doom. This is going to be, you know, I guess the last chance for LOD to become the tag team champions. And the match does not go that long. It only goes about 5 minutes because Billy Gunn knocks Hawk to the floor and then hits Animal with one of the tag belts. Road Dogg lays on top of Animal, gets the pin, and LOD are kind of done. Like, they've been beaten, and then Animal and Hawk start fighting. And I wondered how you felt about all this, Sandra.
I wasn't ready for this. I really wasn't ready for this. It's been a rough week in wrestling, Kenny. Like, SmackDown's terrible, obviously, but there have been things happening outside of that world, right? Like, there is dissension in the world of Attack Wrestling with the Anti-Fun Police breaking up, and I watched this episode of Retro Raw on the same day as the first video where Los Federales Santos Jr., like, gave the dog tags to, you know, Chief Deputy Dunn, and it was really sad. And so I was dealing with the Anti-Fun Police breaking up and then also the Legion of Doom breaking up here. I wasn't ready for that. I wasn't ready for that at all. I mean, the whole intro video was about the New Age Outlaws and Legion of Doom and, you know, and it showed the Quebecers. And then that reminded me that I'm actually going to see Quebecer Pierre wrestle live in New Orleans, which is great. I'm so excited. Did I tell you about this?
No.
Yes. So Joey Janela on Monday actually released a video, and it revealed that one of the matches at Joey Janela Spring Break 2 is going to be Walter versus, what's his actual name, Pierre Carl Ouellet?
Yes.
Yes. So I'm going to see Quebecer Pierre wrestle live in New Orleans at Joey Janela Spring Break 2, and everybody should come to that, because that show's going to be fucking amazing. Like, I am so, so excited. And I mean, now, Retro Raw tie-in, right? Well, I mean, Great Sasuke is on the card as well, wrestling Joey Janela. So yeah, another Retro Raw person that we've seen, which is great. But yeah, so I mean, New Age Outlaws versus Legion of Doom as a match wasn't great. And it just made me really mad at Earl Hebner, because he just keeps being so concerned about Hawk getting out of the ring that he doesn't count, you know, the pinfall, because they hit a doomsday device on Road Dogg and get the pinfall, right? But Earl Hebner's like, no, Hawk, you get out of the ring. I can't be bothered to turn around and actually count a pinfall here. And then his back is turned when Billy hits Animal with the title. And so then, of course, he can count the pin for Road Dogg pinning Animal when he can't notice that Legion of Doom is pinning people. Earl Hebner is terrible at his job. The refereeing is awful. And I just wasn't ready for, you know, Animal to be raging at Hawk, and then Hawk shoves Animal. And this brawl is great, though. Like, all of the agents come out to try and keep them apart, and it looks like Animal's leaving at one point because they've been brawling for a while, and Animal starts to go up the ramp, but then he just, like, runs back to the ring because he's not done, and then there's more brawling, and I really hope that Hawk is the good guy here, because he's the one I actually like. I don't know if it's going to be a breakup where one of them is heel and one of them is face, and we're going to get Hawk versus Animal in a battle of shouting, but I don't know. I wasn't ready for this. I was having a lot of feelings about this, but it was good, and it actually got me intrigued, and that's not something that Retro Raw does all that well a lot of the time. Like, JR has a line at one point where he says, you've got to wonder if the looks on their faces are looks of anger or looks of sadness, and my heart sort of broke. Like, I was really, really sad.
It's sad times. It's sad times in the World Wrestling Federation when LOD are breaking up. They're beating each other up, and the Outlaws are on top, and it's so sad. But to make it even
and
more
you
sad,
you just kind of want them to make up, and throughout the show we see that that doesn't happen. We'll get to some more later.
But speaking of sad, Ahmed Johnson was officially released on this day. on February the 23rd.
Oh, really?
And it stems from an incident that happened at this, at the Saturday night taping in Dallas. Ahmed Johnson had 4 years remaining on a 5-year contract. Can you imagine?
5 more years of Ahmed Johnson. Oh boy.
The company apparently wasn't that happy with him because he was injuring people. He had his own injuries all the time. And then he kept losing momentum every time he had the injuries, etc., etc., etc. But anyway, at the Dallas TV, he was asked to do a job for Kurgan using the claw, and he refused and walked out and never came back. And that is it. So Kurgan is also to blame for the demise of Ahmed Johnson.
That is quite sad. It's not Kurgan's fault.
The rumor is that people kind of knew he would react this way, so that's kind of why he was asked to do it, because then it was a way for him to kind of just get out.
Like they were just sort of forcing his hand and kind of wanting him to leave and not come back.
So they've legally gotten out of it because he breached his contract. And
clever bastards.
He then claimed to friends shortly afterwards that he never refused to do the job, was never asked to do the job, but he felt the company was trying to bury him since he openly spoke on the wrong side of the fence on the Survivor Series finish, and that was kind of it. Now, also, backstage in Dallas, there was a backstage fight between Sunny and Luna.
Really? Tell me more.
Apparently, there's not a lot of details about it, but somebody said something in confidence about the other one, and then Luna found out that Sunny had kind of like basically gossiped about Luna, and it resulted in Sunny having a large bruise in her back and a back injury, but by the end of the night, they'd made up and everything was fine.
Well, I'm glad they made up and everything was fine, but yeah, that doesn't sound so good.
So that's that. And also,
Luna's fighting Sable on TV and Sunny backstage.
Yep. She's just getting all about it.
Apparently.
Ken Shamrock was facing the NWA North American champion and WWE Hall of Famer, Jeff Jarrett.
So, you and David get to break all of the news, right? Like, this is a bone of contention I have, because you and I always record after you and David record, because most of the announcements happen on Raw. So you and David have talked at length about Jeff Jarrett going into the Hall of Fame. I haven't even gotten to say a thing about it, right? And
I apologize. So the floor is yours, Sandra.
So Jeff Jarrett going into the Hall of Fame is hilarious to me. I think it's funny. I just think it's hilarious because we're watching him at this awful, awful point on Retro Raw.
The worst point of his career.
The worst. Well, I'm glad that this is the worst point of his career and not the highlights of his career, because, oh boy, is this bad. NWA Jeff Jarrett is shite. And I think it's really funny how many tweets I got from people saying, oh, I bet Sandra's raging that he's going into the Hall of Fame. You know what? If With My Baby Tonight gets played on Raw regularly, then I'm not upset at all. That makes me the happiest girl in the world. My bone of contention is that the WWE right now is acting as though Jeff Jarrett sang the song when he didn't. We know it was Jesse Jammies.
That has to be exposed this year. Surely to God.
We need an expose at WrestleMania, right? We need an expose at WrestleMania. You put the scenario out there that Elias could be in the middle of the ring at WrestleMania and Jeff Jarrett could interrupt him to sing With My Baby Tonight. Our good friend Alan said that we need Road Dogg behind a curtain or something. And I mean, I don't want to see Road Dogg singing With My Baby Tonight. I want to see Jesse Jammies singing With My Baby Tonight. I want him to dress up in the cowboy hat. I want him to be wearing his awful shirt that looks like Nightwing. I want all of it. I want him to come out and interrupt and be like, no, look, I'm really the one singing. And that will be my favorite WrestleMania segment of all time, Kenny. And I will be there with you live in New Orleans, and we can just let the glory of With My Baby Tonight wash over us, and it would be beautiful.
It's basically what I'm hoping for. And the good thing is that, you know, so we've got 4 weeks, or no, 6 weeks till WrestleMania.
Yes.
This is the end of North American Jeff Jarrett here.
Wait, this mm-hmm. right here on this episode? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because I guess there's the dissension after the match.
So
that makes sense.
All I'm going to say is maybe you might need to be prepared for some light-up stuff coming soon.
See, and that's my thing, too, is I feel like I'm going to be a lot happier about this induction of Jeff Jarrett once he starts wearing light-up things again, because I have a fondness for light-up things, as we know, and he might just become my favorite.
So
I mean, you put on light-up glasses, and I'm happy. Like, that's part of the reason I like Naomi. I don't think she's a great wrestler, but she does a light-up entrance, and that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Jeff Jarrett, I mean, the thing is, he created TNA and it gave AJ Styles and Samoa Joe a place to work. Fuck off, he can go in. People have done worse.
I mean, that's fine. I'm really more focused on, you know, I just want him to have... Did he come out on a horse?
I'm not giving away spoilers to you.
I'm so excited to find out. I don't remember if it's like a horse or a mule or what sort of animal it is, and I can't wait.
Ken Shamrock versus Jeff Jarrett. Cornette's trying to, you know, interfere at every point. He's tripping Shamrock up. Shamrock grabs Cornette. But in the end...
At one point, I just felt like Cornette was getting a little too ballsy and could potentially die. Like, he's grabbing Ken Shamrock's foot, and he's getting super cocky. And I just believe that Ken Shamrock could legitimately murder Jim Cornette. And I would be a little more afraid, frankly.
I can understand why you would be afraid of that.
Do you notice that they did like way too much of a close-up on Jeff Jarrett's dick as he was strutting when he came out for his entrance?
I did not notice that.
I felt uncomfortable about it, especially because he has white gear.
Anyway, near the end of the match, I was going to go down a rabbit hole there that I'm not going down. Cornette ends up trying to whack Shamrock with a tennis racket, but he misses and hits Jarrett. Shamrock has the ankle lock on Double J for the win, and on the way back to the dressing room, Michael Cole grabs a word with Jarrett and he says maybe it's time that he and Cornette go their separate ways. Duh!
I mean, there's just so much dissension on this show. So much dissension. And I don't have nearly the feelings about Jeff Jarrett versus Jim Cornette as I had about, you know, the Legion of Doom exploding. But,
That it's a good career move for Jeff Jarrett to get away from Jim Cornette?
No, because then he's just Jeff Jarrett.
But you think it's a good idea for him to be part of the NWA stable?
No, I don't think it's... Well, I mean, that's part of the problem, right? Is that Cornette is apparently bound to this NWA stable, which is terrible. But he's still Jim Cornette, and he's still great. So if he can talk for Jeff Jarrett and whatnot, then that's always kind of nice. But I guess at this point, if he's getting, you know, hit with a racket... And Cornette actually was not an asset to Jeff Jarrett here. He, you know, it was a problem. So I can understand why Jeff Jarrett would want to go his separate ways and get out of the NWA, but he's still the NWA champion, so I don't really know how that's going to work. Why wasn't this match for the title, was my other question. Because
they don't
want
to give the NWA North American title to Ken Shamrock.
Well, I suppose not, but wouldn't it be kind of funny if you did?
It'd be great. It'd be absolutely great. Jerry Lawler's backstage trying to get an
update. It'd be almost like the Headbangers winning the NWA tag team titles. Oh,
almost.
Wait.
Almost. The King's trying to get an update in LOD. Animal says he doesn't have a brother, and then they keep fighting. So
I ain't got no brother, and then Hawk comes in, and then, you know, he's just raging. Bradshaw, Thrasher, Mosh, and someone in purple trunks are trying to, like, run off Hawk, and there are agents, and it's, I don't know, it's great. There's dissension.
Chaos.
Gotta love some chaos.
The DOA come out, and Michael Cole's basically jizzing over their motorcycles.
Well, Titan Motorcycles must be sponsoring Raw now, right?
Well, I mean, if it's Titan Sports, you may as well have Titan Motorcycles.
Well, but I'm just saying, because they majorly focus on the motorcycles more than they normally do. There was a lovely purple one. I liked it quite a lot. But they specifically mentioned the focus on the Titan Motorcycles. And I feel like Titan bought some advertising time here on Retro Raw.
I fully believe it. But the DOA come out. We find out, Sondra, that at WrestleMania 14, there is going to be a 15-team Battle Royal.
Did we find that out?
Mm-hmm.
I totally missed that.
15 teams.
How do you... Why? Why? Who? Where are they going to find these teams? Mexico?
Well, you got two teams in the Briquas.
Right.
You got DOA. You got the Truth Commission. You got The Nation.
So that's like 4, 5?
Yeah.
I haven't been counting.
I'm sure.
We just need to find 10 more?
I'm sure Flash Funk will find somebody.
Be there, aren't there?
Of course they are.
Ugh. Gross.
Oh, imagine the Godwins win.
No!
So anyway, we get the Truth Commission coming out with Kurgan and the Jackal. They all just look like...
Kurgan is here! It's all three of them! And he's not wearing a shiny green shirt like the other guys.
It just looks like they're all on different nights out.
It kind of does.
But of course, you know, in the end, Kurgan ends up doing the claw thing for the win.
The paralyzer, Kenny. It's the paralyzer.
I mean, it paralyzes my enjoyment of wrestling. So maybe that's, you know, we'll take it in that way. Sniper then is angry at the Jackal and he's going to hit him, but Kurgan won't let it happen and then puts the claw on Sniper. And then Recon's trying to like keep everyone together, and the Jackal, just nails Recon. So, yeah, this happened. Any thoughts?
Okay, so first of all, Kurgan's angry face and furrowed eyebrows are everything. I love his cartoon face. I love his cartoon moves. He cannot kick at all, and he is terrible, and I love him. And I think my favorite part of the match was right at the beginning. Recon tried to kick chains and just fell down. Because... they are all so bad. Like, they are terrible. I love everything about this, though. So Kurgan tags in, and, you know, him trying to hit people. I don't know who's worse, Kurgan or Kali. Like, they are the same level of immobile. I mean, Kurgan's knees bend better, but just in terms of having to actually do moves to people, it doesn't work very well. DOA did slam Kurgan at one point, and then he got all mad. And then, you know, he gets the paralyzer to I forget who, but it's like the dissension in the Truth Commission too. There's just dissension throughout this entire show, because now obviously Sniper is raging at the Jackal, and Peacekeeper Recon is just not doing, like, he's just not effective. There's too much dissension for Peacekeeper Recon to even be effective here. And I mean, Kurgan puts the paralyzer on Sniper and actually drags Sniper to the back still with the paralyzer on. And I think I'm more invested than anyone in the history of ever in the breakup of the Truth Commission.
I think you are. I think that's an accurate statement. I can't think of anybody else who's ever shared as much interest in this as you have.
Well, and they're billing it now as Kurgan and the Truth Commission. So Kurgan's not even a part of the Truth Commission anymore. I assume that's why he's not wearing his shiny green shirt.
Yes.
So I can understand why Sniper and Recon are upset, because the priority of the Jackal has been Kurgan, and the Jackal's been, you know, paying all of the attention to Kurgan and not paying nearly enough attention to Sniper and Recon. So I can understand why they feel a bit jilted here. But... yeah, so and the Jackal, normally he will calm Kurgan down and say, you know, no, don't put the paralyzer on our own people. The Jackal did not stop him here.
He did not. Before we get to the next segment where we see DX, WWF did a bunch of press over the weekend in Canada to try and help their image after the Bret Hart thing, where they were on Off the Record. So they did a show on February the 20th. Where there was Hunter Hearst Helmsley, China, and Doc Hendricks on the show.
And that's going to help their image?
The three of them together.
Right. I bet that's something.
You can find it on YouTube if you want to watch it. The Survivor Series finish comes up. Hunter claims that neither he or Sean knew about it ahead of time. And then Doc Hendricks tries to like keep repeating the same story. But, you know, Vince did what he had to do because of the fear that Bret would go to Nitro the next night with a belt, even though he couldn't because he'd be sued.
Which is total bullshit.
Yeah. And then on this day, February 23rd, Vince McMahon went on Off the Record. You can find all the clips on YouTube of him get into mass amounts of detail. But Vince, on Off the Record, basically said about Bret, he was asked about, you know, what happened. And he said that the reason that he did it was that a lot of reasons Bret was breaking down physically. He was getting to be a little bit of a pain in the ass in terms of his attitude. He was disruptive in the locker room. He wanted things his way. To a certain extent, I can understand that. But we have to move on. We have to progress in what we do. We can't hold back. Can't keep things the way they used to be for everybody. Bret's body started to break down. He started to miss dates and things of that nature. And what's to be expected, I suppose. Although you have to look at him as the Iron Man. And certainly he has been that in this industry. But Bret's value began to wane. And I looked at it in terms of, I think I was really sorry after I'd done the deal. I was sorry that I had. Had everything gone smoothly, then we would have lived with it. That's not what happened. It didn't go smoothly. I wanted to change Brett's character. I wanted to be able to mix things up. That was difficult. He was difficult to do business with. It was sort of like the tail wagging the dog. It was then I decided that, you know, maybe Brett might be better off financially somewhere else. We thought we would be better off financially without Brett. And he goes on, talks about the whole
thing. That sounds almost like the promos that they aired on Raw. Like, almost the same verbiage.
Yep. Yep, that's right. And then Vince claimed that the only person who believed that Brett was a Canadian hero is Bret Hart, which Michael Landsberg disagreed with. Vince said, you know, he plays the part of a Canadian hero. Bret Hart is a human being. Although he may think he's a Canadian hero, I don't think so. And Landsberg said, Vince, believe me, Bret Hart is a Canadian hero. So it's a fascinating interview to watch if you have the time or the inclination to listen to more about Montreal. But this is the first time that Vince has spoken out publicly, kind of out of character. But he, yeah, it's interesting to see him try and babyface himself a little bit.
So he's still trying to come across as the good guy here.
Mm-hmm.
Which is baffling, because it's been months, and people are still booing him. I mean, that happened in November. We're in February. People are still booing Vince every time he appears on screen, which hasn't been a lot lately, but...
But even at this point, they do not have any plans to do Austin versus McMahon.
Which is baffling. Like, if you watch it, knowing that that's where it leads, I mean, it absolutely makes sense that Austin versus McMahon is a thing. We saw Austin stunner Vince McMahon. We saw, like, we've seen the dissension between Austin and McMahon kind of start. So at this point, they still have no plans to do that whatsoever.
Well, basically, the reason it comes about is when Sean, because they don't know at this point that Sean's done.
Okay.
But then when they realize Sean's done, they have to come up with something else. And Hunter's not really ready. He's not at that level. So Vince.
It's interesting for sure.
We go to DX at the home of Shawn Michaels in San Antonio. China and some blonde woman are at the bar in his pool room.
That's got to be Shawn's wife, right?
Timing wise, I don't know if he was still with his wife at that point.
He does kiss the woman.
Yeah, maybe it is his wife. Yeah, maybe. Anyway, so Hunter talks about how, you know, how tough they are. And then there's this, so then Sean says next Monday in Cleveland's a great place to start, with Owen Hart's there, Steve Austin, Mike Tyson, and then Hunter says it's WrestleMania's gonna be X-rated, and then Hunter does this thing that I assume is meant to be cool, but it's so awkward, because he ends the promo at the pool table, kind of like he's about to hump the pool table, and he says,
yes,
WrestleMania will now be stamped X-rated, viewer discretion is advised, will be completely fucking ignored.
Yeah, it doesn't come across. I don't know. It's supposed to be edgy. This feels like he's just trying to be edgy, Kenny. So I was having trouble paying attention to what Sean was saying. He does guarantee that he will face Stone Cold at WrestleMania, which I found interesting because he tends to not end up showing up for pay-per-views a lot. So I thought it was interesting that he was like, no, I'm going to fucking be there, right? But I was really distracted by Sean's bar because he has this really gorgeous bar area, right? With a really nice bar and there's mirrors behind it, but he has a load of shit for alcohol in that bar. He had like a half gallon of VO, and he had Bacardi, which I mean is fine, but Shawn Michaels should be able to afford better, and Absolute, and like, I mean, I know some of my favorite things weren't around in the 90s, but there had to be better stuff than this. I was not impressed.
Shawn Michaels in his alcohol. I mean, it's, you know, he was more into other things.
And why was VO in a half gallon and Bacardi was in liters? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. But whatever. And also, he has, like, guns and horseshoes on his wall. I was way more intrigued by the decor of Shawn Michaels' home than I was by anything he was saying. Because it was just, like, X-rated, whatever.
Up next is the strangest match in the history of the World Wrestling Federation, as Takuma Shinoku is going to be taking on Barry Windham of the NWA. Sunny is the ring announcer.
So bizarre. She's wearing her red pleather getup, and her hair is stacked on her head. She looks quite good.
She always looks
although
amazing.
It's not my favorite outfit of hers, though.
I think maybe the pink dress thing is my favorite.
That one was quite good. I mean, the white one was good, too. She had a couple pink ones that were really nice. But, I don't know, the red pleather is fine. She wore this one on Livewire before, so I always think of it as her Livewire outfit.
Imagine a year ago that was a frame of reference that you had. Now, so basically,
we've been doing this for over a year.
Oh yeah, but like what, 18 months?
Something like that. Feels like forever.
Mm-hmm. So we get Taka versus Barry Windham. This must have been your dream. Taka
Barry
Michinoku
Windham
and
his chaps facing Taka Michinoku. It's just, it's so baffling. Like, why is this happening? Just because reasons? Like, because they needed to put something on the show?
They probably wanted to get both of them on the show and then thought, why don't we just have them face each other?
I guess. I mean, I guess why not? Because it's weird because you don't see Taka Michinoku face people who aren't Jerry Lawler and who aren't light heavyweights very often. Because normally it's, you know, light heavyweight division matches. But apparently, and that's, you know, something I would kind of like to see from the 205 Live contingent of nowadays, is it'd be kind of cool to see Drew Gulak versus Finn Balor or something like that, right? Like, that could be a possibility of something that would happen. But yeah, so this is just bizarre. I don't understand, but I'm into it.
So we get Taka versus Barry Windham. Jim Cornette's on commentary. Windham is just killing him with a superplex and a lariat. But as Barry Windham goes for the pinfall, the lights go out, and of course it is Kane. The NWA are get out of Dodge so quickly.
Like, they just disappear by the time the lights come back on, basically. Taka Michinoku is just lying there in the ring, and I felt so bad for Taka Michinoku in that moment, because I just did not envision that this would go well for him. And it does not.
Taka is left to take a choke slam and a tombstone by Kane, and then Paul Bearer gets in the microphone and says, there is only one WWF superstar that Kane's interested in, and that's Stone Cold Steve Austin. So he's challenging Stone Cold to meet him in the ring in a match next week in Cleveland.
This I did not expect, and oh boy, like Kane calling out Steve Austin, that's pretty amazing.
Steve Austin versus Kane in Cleveland. I bet you did not think you were getting this next week.
I did not. I still don't know if I'm getting that next week. Like, I still don't trust it. It seems like shenanigans will be afoot, because I don't believe that they're going to give me such a nice thing.
But we're about to enter the war zone. Michael Cole's out in the parking lot trying to get a word from the New Age Outlaws. You know, they're just talking about how they kind of get rid of LOD and how they're old. And then they're about to get in the rental car, and then Chainsaw Charlie and Cactus Jack turns up. Chainsaw has his chainsaw, obviously. And Cactus has a baseball bat. Cactus smashes their windshield with a baseball bat. And Chainsaw Charlie is just yielding that chainsaw all
over. He's trying to, like, chainsaw the door.
He's the best.
He's amazing. So before Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie come out, you know, Michael Cole, bless him, he's trying to do his investigative reporting.
He's a war correspondent.
He is a war correspondent, and he's corresponding, you know, the war of the New Age Outlaws now, I guess. And so, you know, Billy's like, every time we pull up to the building, people want to know what we're going to do tonight. And Road Dogg's like, this is a New Age, and we're the New Age Outlaws. And they're just not giving Michael Cole the time of day, right? And one of them definitely says, before getting into this car, I'm already half drunk. I hope it's not the one driving. Could very well be. Don't really know. Don't really trust their decision making at this point. Like, they were just not about being interviewed. Michael Cole actually says the words as he's trying to get a hold of Billy Gunn. He's like, Billy, Billy, B.A. Billy. He actually calls him B.A. Billy. Like, who? That sounds ridiculous as a nickname in commentary speak, but he is actually addressing this man, Kenny, as B.A. Billy. Who says that?
I mean, it's a bad thing when whatever you call him, it makes B.A. double crooked letter look good.
Right? It's not a good thing at all. But yeah, Chainsaw Charlie and Cactus Jack absolutely come in and smash it, pun intended. Because, yeah, they kick the shit out of the windshield. And I love Chainsaw Charlie just chainsawing the door of the car. And there are sparks. And I don't blame Road Dogg and Billy Gunn for wanting to drive away. And then they talk about them being halfway on the freeway at one point. I'm like, with that windshield? No, they're not going to get far with the windshield like that. They wouldn't be able to see anything. Because it's completely smashed. But it's
true.
Not, like, gone, though. So it would just be, you wouldn't be able to see anything.
Vehicular frivolity is at foot here on Raw.
It's true.
Chainsaw Charlie and Cactus Jack. Now it is time, Sondra, for you to experience the American Dream.
And we cut, was something.
We cut to a pre-tape of a silhouetted Dusty Rhodes, seemingly. talk about how many times he's won the world title, but it keeps going up like 1,000 every time. And then we see clips of him as Dusty Rhodes as the Common Man in the late 80s in WWF. And his greatest hour was making it to WrestleMania 6 with Sapphire. One of the greatest lines of all time. and out comes to the American Dream
so
music.
They say Sapphire, like the late great Sapphire. Is she dead already?
Uh-huh.
That's so sad.
She died in the mid-90s, I think. Well, let me just check.
How did she die? How old was she?
She died in 1996, and she was 61 years old.
That's sad. That's not very old at all.
She left the WWF. She went and worked at Grandpa's Pigeons, which is a discount store in Missouri. She liked telling old wrestler stories, and she died from a heart attack on September the 11th, 1996.
Aw. I didn't realize she died that early. I mean, I knew that she was gone now, but that's just sad.
But yeah, it's funny, the reason that she got the job was that she was a huge wrestling fan, and she would drive wrestlers to the arena.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So, yeah. Nice lady. So, then we get Dusty Dust, which is Gold Dust dressed as Dusty Rhodes against Bradshaw.
Like, why do they call him Dusty Dust? That's stupid. They should just say, like, Dusty or something. I don't know. It just, Dusty Dust sounded dumb. I didn't like it.
So talk me through your thoughts of Goldust's impersonation of the American Dream. How did he do?
I mean, he did pretty well. Part of the issue is that Goldust looks a lot like Dusty Rhodes anyway. So as he's coming out, I mean, obviously he looks ridiculous. He has his singlet. He's in the polka dots and everything, and he has it stuffed so that he looks fat. But this was super weird because he looks a lot like his father. And so it was a little too eerie. Like, he just, I don't know. He looks almost too much like him to do an impersonation and make it super funny and ridiculous. Cause he just kind of looks like him and sounds like him. And I don't know. They do mention that Luna's not out there with him, and she's not, which is strange, but then I kind of realized that it's probably good that Luna isn't out there, because she probably would have tried to do blackface to be Sapphire, and we really don't need any more blackface anywhere in life, so I'm kind of okay with this. But yeah, the whole him facing Bradshaw thing, though, am I supposed to get behind Bradshaw here?
Yes.
Is that what they're trying? Like, I'm just not, though. I don't like him. And part of that is just because I don't really like JBL just in general. But also, I don't think Bradshaw is very interesting. Like, this was just strange. This just seemed like an overblown attempt to make fun of Dusty Rhodes. And it was just kind of annoying overall.
Well, JR does make a point at the beginning saying, oh, you know, a WWF official called the Dream today and he had a good laugh about it. But in the end, Bradshaw kills Dusty Dust with a lariat, and then Michael Cole does a promo with him, and he says, oh, this isn't working. I'm going to go back to Gold Dust.
Yeah, like, he makes the very specific point. He was like, Dusty Rhodes can't compare to Gold Dust. I'm hanging these tights up. And I don't know. Like, I really like Dusty Rhodes, so it was just kind of like, all right,
There's no way that you can put yourself in Dusty Rhodes' gear and impersonate him, and I'm not going to enjoy it.
It's
the Common Man music.
It was good to hear the Common Man music. It was, I don't know, I think I got annoyed earlier on too, because, you know, he says, like, I'm the American Dream Dusty Rhodes, the only real Texan. And he says something about, like, Bradshaw should be bumping his little ass around the ring for me. And it just kind of sounded like Vince Russo speaking through Gold Dust and wanting to add some shoot language and make it edgy and be like, oh, let's make fun of the fact that Dusty wants everyone to bump around for him or something. I don't know.
Yep.
It was a thing.
I mean,
I enjoyed the Common Man music. It's always fun to see Dusty impersonations, but the whole segment kind of annoyed me.
Kevin Kelly tries to grab some time with Road Warrior Hawk, who's without makeup, he's in his street clothes, and he just walks right past him and leaves.
I don't think, like, well, obviously he's not alive anymore, but I feel like if during this time I saw Hawk on the street in street clothes, I would definitely not recognize him, because you could have had anyone walk out and be like, oh, Road Warrior Hawk is totally who you are, and I would believe it, because I just don't recognize him without the makeup. And when he covers up his hair, because he always has that, like, bandana thing on,
mm-hmm.
he looks like a completely different human.
That's kind of the Dream, though, right? that you wouldn't get recognized.
I mean, it's got to work out nicely if you want to go out in public and whatnot.
The most boring man alive decides to do a karate rave show again.
Okay, he does have glow sticks, though, so is he the most boring man alive? Because I beg to differ.
Who's more boring on this show than him?
Bradshaw.
Bradshaw's got a good clothesline, looks like kill somebody.
Yeah, but he's still terrible.
I'm not saying he's good. I'm just saying he's not... I mean, it's Steve Blackman.
I'm just intrigued by how Steve Blackman can manage to look so bored in everything he does. Like, he actually looks kind of bored as he does glow sticks. I'm fascinated by this.
So he's continuing his undefeated streak against The Rock in a non-title bout. We see clips from last week, obviously, where, you know, Blackman upset Farouk with a victory thanks to The Rock. And it's all kind of going well, but then Farouk gets up in the apron and D'Lo grabs Steve Blackman's nunchucks and tosses them over The Rock by mistake into the hands of Steve Blackman.
By mistake in inverted commas,
yes.
Because...
And then Blackman pins The Rock, gets the win, and then D'Lo blames Farouk and says, Farouk told me to do it. The Rock tries to talk to Farouk. Farouk walks out, tells the rest of the nation to come with him. Sandra, I don't know if the nation's ever going to be the same.
I don't think the nation ever will be the same. It seems like there's more dissension on this show. Everyone's breaking up. No one is staying together. There are no actual friendships, and it's so, so sad. But, I mean, Farouk looks so pleased with himself for distracting the referee and then also having The Rock lose. And, I mean, and obviously The Rock is raging. And, you know, I love D'Lo just being like, Farouk told me to, man. Like, I had to do it because Farouk told me to. And then Farouk, is this the first time that we hear him say damn?
I think it is.
Because he gets in the ring and he goes, damn! And he's so sarcastic and so pleased with himself that Rocky got beat. He is so pleased with himself. He has this little, like, kind of half grin, and he's not even trying to look upset about it. He's really not.
It's a shame because, like, Farouk here is great, but Farouk, you know, when eventually they do break up and Farouk has to be a babyface, it's not very good.
Well, Farouk wouldn't be a very good babyface, probably.
No.
But,
and the thing
I
that
mean,
kept Farouk
the match...
going, the thing that kept Farouk going in the end was the Bradshaw thing. They needed each other. Without each other, they'd have been dead on arrival. Anyway, sorry.
I mean, we see how great Bradshaw is now, so... Or is not at all. But yeah, I thought they had a nice little callback to Steve Blackman's victory over Farouk as well, where Farouk was distracting the referee and then Steve Blackman rolled up The Rock and The Rock kicked out. So I think Farouk was probably pretty raging that The Rock didn't get beaten in the same fashion as him. But I thought that was a nice little callback and a nice little storytelling moment.
Kevin Kelly is backstage talking to Luna, asking why she didn't commit to support Goldust. She said that she's waiting for Sable to make her grand entrance and she plans to take her Estee Lauder face and turn it into an Andy Warhol original. And from this point, Luna's going to be on Sable like maggots on roadkill. She's great.
Oh, she's incredible. Like, are Sable and Luna actually going to have a match at some point?
Because it
seems like they're... Well, I know that you're not going to spoil it, but I'm just speculating because it seems like that's where they're going with this, which is interesting because women don't wrestle at this point. Like, we've not seen women wrestling.
No.
And we know that Luna is an actual wrestler and Sable is not, but it kind of seems like that's where they're going. I mean, I guess you could have said that that's where it seemed like they were going with Chyna and Marlena to some extent, but it never really seemed like they would.
Yeah, I think the problem with the Marlena and Chyna thing is I don't think there is a way to do it.
No, there really isn't. But Sable and Luna, like, just size-wise, because Marlena is so tiny and Chyna's so big, and Marlena is the not wrestler and Chyna is the, well, not really a wrestler at this point either, so it wouldn't have really worked. But with this, it's kind of like, I mean, size-wise, they don't look that, I don't know, mismatched, I guess, if you were to put Luna against Sable.
Yeah.
Again, I just, all of this makes me wish that Sable were a better performer, because the story stuff is great.
So, up next, we have the NWA World Tag Team titles on the line as the Rock and Roll Express defend against the Headbangers, but NWA official Tommy Young is in there, but Commissioner Slaughter comes out and switches him with Errol Hebner, because this is a WWF match. Jim Cornette threatens to sue
Sorry, but it's for the NWA Tag Team titles. And also, did they see Earl Hebner earlier in the show? That's who you want to be your upstanding official? He is terrible at his job.
I mean, I can't argue with you. Earl Hebner is very incompetent.
I think Cornette has a reason to be raging here. Because Tommy Young, I mean, Tommy Young did obviously disqualify the Headbangers for throwing Robert Gibson, I think it was Robert Gibson, over the top rope last week. But that's what he's supposed to do, because if you're contesting the NWA championships, then shouldn't it be under NWA rules? Like, I kind of feel like the NWA are right here.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because you've got, you know, you're trying to enforce NWA rules, which seems so archaic at this point.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous to try and enforce the NWA rules, but I mean, if that's the rules of the championship, then I guess that it makes sense, I guess. I mean, all of that said, I love the Headbangers, so I want them to win.
And I mean, this match was absolutely meaningless, even though it was for a title. It goes like 5 minutes. But in the end, Mosh throws Robert Gibson over the top rope, which would be a DQ under NWA rules, but Hebner, of course, is not paying attention. And then Cornette hits Thrasher with a tennis racket, but then he falls on top of Ricky Morton, and Earl Hebner counts to three, and the Headbangers are now the new NWA World Tag Team Champions.
Yeah, so not really a great night for the NWA at all. And there is so much tag team dissension tonight, because there's one point in the match where Robert Gibson hits Ricky Morton off the apron, and then you have Cornette basically causing the victory of Thrasher, which doesn't really make sense. I don't understand why Ricky Morton is just so dead from getting lightly brushed by Thrasher as he falls on top of him. But I guess none of this really makes any sense. And I love that the Headbangers are the NWA Tag Team Champions. I absolutely love it, because who better than the Headbangers to kind of flaunt in the face of Cornette's, no, we need traditional boring wrestling. I know he didn't say boring, but that's what he's brought us, so that's what I'm going with.
It's crap. It's really crap.
I mean, quite bad.
You know, you talk about how sometimes you'll say, you know, people tell me the Attitude Era is good, and this is what we get, and I go, I mean, I can't argue with you here, you know?
No, like, this is
the
terrible.
NWA... The Rock and Roll Express.
The entire, like, contingent of the NWA was represented on this episode of Retro Raw, which is kind of bizarre, because I actually didn't hate this episode of Retro Raw, but it's very weird that all of them got matches. And there was even a title change, and it still doesn't feel like it matters or makes any sense. Like, why did Slaughter want to replace Tommy Young with Earl Hebner? Was he thinking that Tommy Young was biased? Because he wasn't acting biased at all last week. He was just enforcing the rules as he knows them.
I think the idea behind it is that you're in the WWF, so you're going to abide by the WWF
rules. So
you're
going to fight it under WWF rules, which is fine, but they didn't really...
I don't know if that really came through. Cornette is bringing NWA titles into the WWF.
Right.
So... But he then wants to enforce other company rules in the WWF. And Commissioner Slaughter is not a pushover, Sandra.
Apparently he is not.
I mean, we've not seen him for 6 weeks, but, you know.
It's true.
He's been too busy
commissioning. This is where he chooses to appear. This is his hill to die on, is no, Tommy Young, you will not referee this match.
Post-match
we will have Earl Hebner, who is terrible at his job, instead.
The Rock and Roll Express looked like they're about to kill Cornette, but he instead just has a temper tantrum. And that's that.
I mean, is this basically the implosion of the NWA contingent entirely? Because,
yes.
I mean, the Rock and Roll Express do not seem very happy with Cornette either. And Cornette was on commentary earlier and talking about, you know, oh, Jeff Jarrett and I will be fine. There was just some miscommunication. It'll be okay. And it clearly will not be okay, because Jeff Jarrett seems quite done with Jim Cornette. He does not accompany Barry Windham to the ring, and the Rock and Roll Express did. He did not accompany the Rock and Roll Express to the ring for their big, big title match against the Headbangers.
And the Rock and Roll Express don't look too happy with Jim Cornette either.
No, because Cornette caused Thrasher to pin Ricky Morton.
So, are you going to miss the NWA?
In a way, yes, because it's so terrible, and I'm just baffled by its presence. But overall, no, because it was terrible, and the matches were generally not very good. I mean, Jeff Jarrett's matches are fine, but the rest of it did give me Barry Windham in a headband.
So up next, we get an announcement that Pete Rose will be at WrestleMania, an all-hit leader in baseball. So Pete Rose is going to be there.
Yeah. I wonder what will happen.
Get a big video package on Steve Austin this time, the WWF so far. Excellent video package highlighting how great he is, essentially.
It was really good when, it was a really good video package, and it was full of, like, quick cuts and stunners and handcuffs and him flipping the bird and everything that makes us love him, right? And then they switch from, like, the quick cuts to the slow motion when they have a voiceover of Austin calling out Shawn Michaels. It was excellent. I don't know. The production of it was really cool. And it made me laugh when they showed footage of the press conference of Vince McMahon saying, even he doesn't know why Steve Austin is the most popular in the World Wrestling Federation today.
Yep, and I'm not quite sure why.
He's like, I just have no idea. But at least you went with it, Vince. At least you saw that something was popular, and you put that popular thing on your television. That'd be nice.
I smell a 2018 burn there.
little bit.
The main event. The main event for this show is Owen Hart, the European champion, against Marvelous Mark Merrow.
And this is for the title, too. Why does Owen Hart have to keep defending his title?
Because he's a fighting champion, Sondra.
Which is lovely, but he's never said that he's a fighting champion. It's not like an open challenge situation. They just keep putting him in these matches. I mean, he's not complaining about it, but I don't think it's very fair.
Well, he is going to defend it, whether it's fair or not. Mark Merrow, of course, sends Sable back to the dressing room straight away.
Her hair is a lot better this week. I like it curlier.
She looks better when it's a bit bouffant.
Mm-hmm.
Owen Hart ends up, applying the sharpshooter. Ref calls for the bell without even checking on Merrow and awards the match to Owen via DQ for Merrow shoving him before that. It makes no sense.
Yeah,
like,
it really doesn't make any sense at all.
And of course, but luckily, out comes Luna.
This match, though, I will say, was pretty good. Like, I mean, it was not long, but it was fine. And there were some really cool counters, like... You know, Mark Merrow hits Owen in the dick because of course he does, and then you think it's going to be over, but Owen counters the TKO into a DDT, which is great, and then wins with the sharpshooter, and JR says nobody applies the sharpshooter like Owen Hart, and that seems like kind of an intentional dig at Bret Hart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. It pretty much is. I mean, the guy did go, Vince did go to Canada to do a full two-night show to talk about why it's good that they got rid of him, so.
Yes.
It feels like they would. But Luna's out at the end. She's going to get to trying to get Sable. Goldust try to keep it at bay. Referees and agents are coming down to try and help. Sable shoves Merrow down again. Goldust is coming out to try and restrain Sable. And the thing is, Mark Merrow might be a chauvinist, but he does not like when somebody puts their hands on his property. Which is what Goldust did, so Merrow starts punching on Goldust. The crowd are chanting for Sable. Well, Goldust and Luna are sort of like retreating, and then Sable gets in the mic, tells Luna to get her ass back in the ring, and calls her a female dog, essentially.
Well, she goes, "You get your ass back here, you little bitch." Sable is terrible at speaking, although I think at this point she actually is managing to look fairly angry, and so I think she might have a little more facial movement and inflection than Eva Marie.
I think you're right. Luna's infuriated. She wants to come back. And she is not about to let Sable call her a bitch. But Goldust picks her up and carries her to the locker room. So we basically got utter chaos between Mark Merrow and Goldust are now not getting on. And then Sable and Luna want to fight. Chaos.
Lots of chaos. These women want to murder each other and I am here for it. Like, I am really, really here for Luna and Sable. I did not expect to be this into Luna and Sable, but I really, really like it. And it is not a good night to be a tag team in the World Wrestling Federation, Kenny.
It is not.
Because Goldust and Mark Merrow have been tagging together for a while and now there's dissension there because, you know, their women are fighting and so Goldust grabbing... He says that he grabbed Sable to protect her from Luna, or that seemed to be the implication, but, you know, Miro was raging about it, and just chaos all around.
So now we have four matches official for WrestleMania. We have the main event of Stone Cold Steve Austin against Shawn Michaels for the WWF title with Mike Tyson as a special enforcer. Tyson will be on Raw next week for the first time since the incident. The Intercontinental title is in line when The Rock defends against Ken Shamrock. Owen Hart defends his European title again against Triple H. And a 15-team tag team battle royal. So Where
that sounds horrendous. Is it a battle royal where if one person gets tossed out, then the whole team is eliminated?
I can't remember. I'll find it for next week.
I mean, it sounds terrible regardless.
Oh, I can't wait for you to watch it. it is bad. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. But where would your thumb be for this one?
So I actually kind of enjoyed this episode of Retro Raw. Like, all of the chaos, all of the tag teams breaking up, there's a lot that doesn't make any sense at all to me, but it gave me feelings, and I don't know, I kind of liked it. I will give it a thumbs up, which I really, really do.
Wow. So for the first time in the history of Retro Raw, I've got a thumbs in the middle for it, and Sondra
really?
Has a thumbs up.
I don't know, chaos and dissension and the NWA breaking up, and I was, Kurgan was there. I think maybe that's part of it, is that I
you
get
love
so
Kurgan.
Happy. I love Kurgan, and you hate Kurgan.
And I have PTSD from the NWA, so, you know, you don't, because you enjoy it.
I am mildly intrigued by the NWA, yes.
So, yeah.
Taka Michinoku versus Barry Windham is a thing that happened. I mean, and Kane came out to be awesome and then call out Steve Austin. Like, I don't know, it's just there was stuff that kept me watching, which again is rare for Retro Raw, so I was pleased.
So yeah, I mean, overall though, it was a fun episode. There was enough to kind of keep you interested. For me, it was a little bit more thumbs in the middle. It was kind of like a placeholder episode in a lot of ways, because we're building towards this big show in Cleveland where, you know, everybody's back and there's stuff to happen, so. But, LOD, we have loved you, so. Should we play their music?
I think we should play their music.
Because they are the best. So, we will be back next week to talk about the Cleveland Raw, where, let me just run down some of the card for you, Sondra.
Oh, boy.
The New Age Outlaws will defend their World Tag Team Championships against the DOA.
Why?
Mark Merrow will face... Are you ready for this?
No, probably not.
Tom fucking Brandy.
Again? Why?
The European title will be on the line again.
Why?
As Owen Hart defends against Mark Henry of the Nation of Domination.
Mark Henry? What has he done?
A match that I think you're going to love more than life itself. A six-man tag team match as the NWA Tag Team Champions, the Headbangers, and Taka Michinoku face the Rock and Roll Express and Barry Windham. in a match
that almost seems like they're building a feud with Barry Windham and Taka Michinoku, which I kind of love. What is it, like a minute?
1 minute and 48 seconds.
Oh gosh.
Steve Blackman continues his tirade against the Nation as he faces Kama, and I don't want to say too much more, but Double J is on Raw next week.
Really?
We get another WrestleMania celebrity, and then the main event of the show, Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Kane. Tons and tons of stuff next week. Yeah, probably the biggest episode before WrestleMania, I would say.
You say that, but none of those matches sound that exciting, other than Steve Austin and Kane.
I'm telling you the match titles, I'm not telling you anything that happens anywhere, deliberately. And remember, one of the matches I just listed to you lasts 1 minute and 48 seconds. This is not
true,
a wrestling heavy
the match
show.
I'm probably most intrigued by, just because, you know, the Headbangers and Taka Michinoku versus the NWA.
Okay. So, like, you're saying those matches don't sound very good. Let me just give you some time cues. New Age Outlaws in the DOA, 1 minute 22 seconds.
Excellent.
Mark Merrow, Tom Brandy, 2 minutes 42 seconds.
Right.
Owen Hart, Mark Henry, 5 minutes. The NWA and the Headbangers and Taka, 1 minute and 48. That's just some of the examples of the times.
So the wrestling really doesn't matter on this episode?
No.
At all?
Nope.
Okay, gotcha.
So, yeah, that's we've got a lot coming up next week, so we'll be there for that. And here is the music to play us out of the one and the only, one of the greatest tag teams of all time. It's LOD. Say the catchphrase, Sondra.
Oh, what a rush.